Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of DealLawyers.com. I'm here today with Mary Beth Kassane, who is a longtime friend, principal of Wallach Associates and president of Corporate Perception Research. And I thought I'd spend a few minutes talking with Mary Beth on monitoring activist activity. The world is changing, and it's a good time to talk with someone like Mary Beth, who keeps her fingers on the pulse of what is happening. And the first question I have for you, Mary Beth, is how do hedge funds have such a solid activism record? I've heard statistically talking about how they've really been successful in the past, and including this current crisis.
Well, I think that part of it goes to the fact that the proxy machinery in the past has worked in the favor of management teams, despite what people are complaining about in this environment, where you see a lot of erosions and a lot of the protections that were traditionally built into the system. It was expensive, it was time-consuming, and I think that it favored corporates, if you needed to call a side that it favored. So activists who were going to go ahead and engage really needed to have assessed the situation pretty carefully to make sure it was not a stinker. In other words, just from a very basic perspective, this was something that they could win. Whenever you engage in one of these things, both sides are going to take the sides of apple pie and motherhood and enhancing shareholder value. And so if an activist feels that they can go in and make that case, persuade the shareholders, and increasingly important is the media, then that's something that's worth their taking on. So I think that they're picking their battles carefully.
So what should companies do to prepare for an activist attack? I mean, my motto has always been, you need to go into crisis management mode before the crisis happens. And I know that's easy to say and hard to do, but what should companies really be doing now?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know, the best way to avoid a situation or a crisis is to, the best way to deal with one is to try to avoid it in the first place. And boy, those are always the most interesting stories of the things that you end up not hearing that happened. But I think from the very biggest picture perspective, I suppose the answer really is have a better answer for enhancing shareholder value than activists do. And of course, there's a couple of things that work against corporates on that argument in that they generally are taking a longer-term perspective than some activists are taking. Sometimes you can have short-term liquidity or you can have short-term valuations that are higher than looking at the business as an ongoing concern. Although, frankly, I think there are plenty of activists who take the perspective of looking at the business from an ongoing concern. What you're really looking for is to have the better story. You're looking to be able to show on an ongoing basis, day in and day out, that you have a handle on your business, you have a handle on how you're making money, that you are doing everything that you should be doing, that you're communicating all of that effectively. I think that, you know, this is one of those situations also where having a good reputation makes a big difference. When you go into crisis mode, or you find that you have to start dealing with reporters that you've not dealt with in the past, or doing things you haven't had to do in the past to communicate in crisis mode, you will not receive the benefit of the doubt from reporters or from investors if you're just then, for the first time, beginning to forge relationships with them. If you've been hiding behind FD and not talking to your institutional investors or your retail investors, if you've engaged in a campaign where you just don't deal with the press, you don't return phone calls, you're going to have a much harder time because these are the filters. One is the audience you need to persuade, another is an important filter for getting through that. And finally, I would add that, you know, there are some activists who, in trying to avoid the expense in the past of dealing with having to kick up the whole proxy machinery, have instead just negotiated directly with the board and through the media in a way to try to save costs. And I think that that's become an effective channel, and corporations really need to understand that and to have built relationships that are in place rather than trying to play catch-up after the fact.
And you and I recently served on a panel together regarding the convergence of the corporate secretary and IRO functions, and I think this next question goes to that, is that who within the company owns the monitoring activist task?
Well, and that was great fun. It's always fun sitting on a panel with you, Brock, so thanks for that. You know, I think that that really does depend. There's no one way to skin a cat on this one. It depends on the company's internal resources. I think generally it's a collaboration between the corporate secretary's office and investor relations. Investor relations has the key relationships with knowing how shareholders are likely to react to things, who your shareholders are, how those positions are moving. The corporate secretary is kind of the filter into the boardroom. You want to make sure that all parties are aware of any changes that are going along there, and I think that that kind of monitoring has to happen before something goes wrong. It's always interesting to me, working with a company in a crisis situation for the first time, if they've not been in one of those situations before, because I think they're surprised sometimes at the fact that a lot of what you do from the get-go is setting up some internal discipline, setting up some infrastructure, making sure that you are aware of what's being said about you out there in the press on a consistent basis. Some of that plumbing, having some of those disciplines in place on an ongoing basis is something that you really want to do all the time. And for most of the crisis firms, for most of the firms that I've worked with who have been through a dust-up or a crisis or a proxy situation, once they've been through that, they leave in place a lot of those disciplines that they put in place to deal with the crisis because they realize that they have tremendous importance on an ongoing basis. But I think it really is a matter of, I don't know that it's as much a matter of who owns doing it. I think it's a collaboration. I think it's a collaboration through the C-suite and the board that is helped by the corporate secretary and the IRO. I know a couple of years back when Sarbanes-Oxley was first being kicked around, there was a lot of talk both amongst the society and also at NERI about, you know, owning the corporate governance function. I think that investor relations officers are happy to engage in that to a bit, but then happy to delegate a lot of that to the corporate secretary. They expect that those functions reside there, and it's really a matter of making sure that you're collaborating, that you're maximizing time and budget, and most importantly in a crisis situation is keeping the lines of communication open and clean so that you've got key decision makers who can decide things quickly as you need to deal with a moving situation.
And how about the financial press? Who within the company should be tasked with dealing?
Well, you know, I've seen companies do that in a number of different ways. Some firms, their investor relations officers only talk to the financial press. So around earnings, around any kind of corporate news, they'll talk to the financial press. Some investor relations officers never talk to the press. They only talk to institutional investors. Some talk to institutional and retail investors. Again, there's no one way to skin a cat. I think it really behooves corporate secretaries to get more familiar with how to deal with the press. The filter of the press is really critical. There are rules of engagement that go along with doing it. And like anything else, it's about relationships and figuring out who are the right reporters, who are the reporters who will do their homework, who are smart. That doesn't mean they're going to give you a pass, but it means that if you've been working with people and you've established a benefit of a doubt because you have credibility, you have credence with them, you've built relationships over time, that doesn't mean you'll get a pass on something. It just means that when there are hard persuasion campaigns going on, you'll get a fair hearing. And what you might also get also that's a help here is an idea of who else the reporter is talking to, where they've been. Certainly they're not going to go ahead if you have a relationship with a reporter and, generally speaking, report without giving you an idea of where they're going and giving you an opportunity to get your 2 cents worth in. Again, that means you need to be in a position to be nimble, to have your thoughts in place so that you can respond quickly to those kinds of things. But those are the opportunities and the heads up that you'll get. So I don't know, again, I don't know. I think generally speaking, it tends to be, you know, many companies will have a public relations department. That doesn't necessarily mean that those are the people who are the right people to be handling the financial press. I think that in a crisis situation, you tend to kind of go through an investor relations officer, a public relations officer will always make sure that they're working carefully with the general counsel. And, of course, that's where those collaborations and, you know, making sure that you're working with folks who are not going to, in every circumstance, tell you no comment is important, just as it is important for the PR and IR people to know that there are times where no comment might be the right comment. So it's a matter of establishing the ground rules and working relationship before you get thrown into the hot water.
That's good stuff. And the last question is, who is the financial press these days? Should those within the company dealing with the press be reaching out to bloggers that cover the industry that a company's in, be monitoring social media, you know, Facebook and MySpace?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that it's becoming, it's an increasingly complicated world. I think that no matter what vehicle you're dealing with a member of the media through, the more important aspect is, who is this reporter? Is it a reporter who honors ground rules? Do you have a relationship with this reporter? Is it somebody who does their homework and is a good reporter? you know, the strategy of doing this kind of thing also is that you do still need to, you know, crises and activism campaigns are tremendously distracting. You do still have a business that you need to run. So you don't need to react to every reporter, although frankly you should always get back to every reporter even if you're not going to respond to them and tell them that you're not going to get, that you're not going to be commenting on the record for them, for you. You just, you know, just from a relationship perspective, that's smart business. But I think whatever the vehicle, you really want to assess, is this a medium that is a filter out to an important constituency that I need to get to? You don't tend to normally have the question of vanity pieces coming up in these situations. It really is more a matter of, am I being distracted by trying to react to something that's going to get out to an audience that isn't really my audience? You need to know who the readers are of certain publications, who follows certain folks in Twitter, for example, who reads certain publications. If it gets to a demographic, that's an important part of your shareholder base and an important part of your stakeholder base. That said, I do think that you need to pay attention to, you know, do I know if Twitter is going to be where people are breaking news in the next couple of months? I don't know, but I think down the road those types of social media are where a lot of very credible information is going to be perceived by people. I guess I've kind of reversed my point on that. I think that people will be going to follow people who they think have tremendous credibility. And so that will have very high value perception for the people who are following certain folks. Then there's other stuff that gets pushed out on the web that's, you know, a little scary. Remember the jokes about, you know, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. I know of investor relations officers who have had bloggers put their, you know, home address information on sites so that they end up getting followed home, they get followed to school. It can be really scary out there. I think it's a case of really needing to separate the wheat from the chaff. And as is true, frankly, in everyday life, but is certainly heightened in a crisis or an activism campaign, you really need to stay focused on what really counts.
That's really good insight, and I'm sure the debate on all this will continue to rage for some time, as it really is so new to all of us. I want to thank you, Mary Beth. It's been great information, and hopefully we can catch up with you soon again and talk about more of this stuff.
Look forward to that, Brock. Thanks.